What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Hustle and Flowchart podcast with your boys, Matt Wolf and Joe Fear.
Wiki, check wiki, wiki. It.
Hey, welcome back. This is part two of our 300th episode. We couldn't commit to...
Oh, we're committing to the whole thing, but we just split it up for y'all.
Yeah.
Make it a little bit more digestible.
I was going to say, technically, this is the 301st episode, but really it's like the 303rd or something if you count our little weekend episodes we sometimes throw
in. That's a good point. Crap. Yeah, we're screwing up the numbers now. Huh?
Yeah, but this is still our 300th legit episode. We're just splitting it into a second part.
Yeah. What's numbers anyway, right?
Well, yeah, no, it's all a man-made concept.
Exactly. So what's the point? It don't matter. Just they're like dust in the wind.
Yeah.
All right. So
I hope you can read these questions better than I can, because I printed this out and this is like literally a 3-point font.
I got pretty good eyes. But let's preface this really fast for folks who might not have heard the intro in the part one.
Yeah.
Is that basically we asked a lot of our folks, everyone in our community, to ask some questions. Anything goes. Even what Matt does. I don't know. I can't think of anything good. Yeah. Getting tired, actually. That's not good.
Wake up.
So I just drank some coffee.
We need to do another one of your breathing, jumping, wiggling exercises.
Cool. Yeah, right before we hit record on the longer episode, because that was a much longer episode than we anticipated, we used the XPT app, and it's rad. And we were doing some jumping, breathing exercises together. You're like, fire breathing and like jumping jack tape stuff. It was cool. So we got jacked. But what we were saying is basically we had a lot of folks give us their questions about anything, and we got basically overwhelmed with questions.
Yeah.
So there's no way in hell we're going to answer all of these questions, but we're going to do our best, and we'll call people out by name. Yes. If they give us a name, and I think they all gave us a name, actually.
I see names on every one. Some of them just first names, but...
That's fine.
Yeah.
Cool. But so, yeah, like Matt said, this is like 3-point font, so we might stumble a little bit.
Well, Joe has lasered eyes. I don't.
That's a good point. All right, so...
And I stopped wearing glasses because I didn't think I looked as cool.
That's... Not because the computer glasses make you... Oh, you mean like other...
No. Like, I'm supposed to wear, like, legit prescription glasses.
That's a good point. You haven't worn glasses in, like,
and
forever,
I just
kind of
stopped because, like, I didn't really like how they felt on my nose, and I thought I looked better without glasses. I'm very vain sometimes.
Yeah, you are.
I'm just like,
yeah. Contacts don't do it for you?
No, I can't do it. I haven't been... No. I tried, like, once. I contacts lasted, like, a week for me.
And
I was like, nope, can't do it.
All right, get some lasers soon, then. It's pretty cool. All right. Should we just go down the list?
Yeah. So we are going to take notes on this like we always do. This will probably be a second set of notes, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Let's do it separate. Yeah.
So hustleandflowchart.com/comp. You can get all the notes on this episode and all of our answers in written form, I guess.
This is going to be weird.
Maybe we'll just give the transcripts of this one. It'd kind of be the same thing.
Yeah, whatever's easy for... I want folks to get some value out of these, cause, and I'm sure you will. Like, not just the person asking the question, of course. There's a lesson for everyone.
No, I kind of flipped through the questions fairly quickly.
I haven't read a single one yet. I'm just judging the font.
I haven't read them all.
Judging the font. I'm like, how am I going to read?
I've read a few of them. I haven't read them all.
Okay.
Obviously, there's a freaking lot. I read a few of them, and most of them are sort of general questions that I think will be beneficial to everyone.
All right. So let's go. Let's start with Austin Sams. So I love that guy. He's an awesome dude. He asked, what's a strategy you learned from an early guest, first 30 episodes or so, that you're still using today? Could be personal or business growth related.
This Good is question. Hard because I don't remember exactly what episodes we did in the first
exactly
30 days.
I know exactly where I'm going.
Okay. Well, I have a couple thoughts. But
I'm pretty sure he's within 30 days. Aaron Fletcher, man.
Okay, Aaron Fletcher.
The KAD method?
That was exactly where my head was going. Kill, the KAD,
automate, destroy.
Yeah.
Or delegate.
That KAD episode where Aaron mapped that out, that was like such a simple freaking framework for automation and, like, you know, setting yourself up for in the business. So that one...
100%.
That one was really big.
Okay.
Go ahead. No, continue your thought on that. There's a second one. I'm trying to remember what I was going to say. So
yeah. KAD, as you're thinking of your thing, KD has come up in like different variations, I feel like, all the time lately. And I think it's because we talked about in part one that we've shaved off so much excess in our business, where we're realizing, like, why the hell are we working so hard? Oh, we don't have to do another freaking live stream because someone else told, because Molly told us that we need to do a live stream. No, I'm just kidding, Molly. But that was just a random example. But like, we don't have to do Pinterest crap because someone says Pinterest is hot. Like, we were doing that kind of shit for far too long.
Yeah.
So the KAD method, I feel like, has been like, it's like when you buy a car and then you start seeing that same car all over the road. I think that's because we're so focused on KADing shit in our business right now.
Yeah.
We're just seeing it like, oh yeah, look, everybody's talking about like eliminating stuff.
Yeah. Well, so some of the other ones that come to mind, like I couldn't say for certain they're in the top, the like the first 30, but they're definitely within the first like,
this is or so 30. Yeah, or so.
I would say they're definitely within the top like
or so
60 or 70 ish. They're in the first third of our show.
I don't know if that's the or so. Yeah,
range. They're in the first third of our of our show.
Just a few, huh?
Yeah. So well, sure. No, I'm thinking.
go.
Gosh dang it, Joe. No, I'm thinking of the ones that like they taught us something on the podcast, and to this day we're still using some of those things.
Okay.
So Dennis, you. $1 the dollar a day ad strategies.
Yeah.
We're still freaking cranking on those every single day.
Kurt Molly,
yeah.
Well, he taught it, but we're already using it though.
Yeah, I don't know if that
we didn't like learn it on the show in real time and then use it.
Yeah, but the Dennis Yu dollar a day strategy, technically we learned it at his session a few months earlier.
See, this is not legit then. God, you're not answering his question. We already answered his question. We have a lot to get through.
Dang it. No, okay, but then so the first time we interviewed Roland Frazier was the same day we interviewed Dennis Yu. So that's right in the same area. Okay. And when we interviewed Roland Frazier, we talked about...
we use a lot from Roland's just general strategies, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, okay. So Roland's strategies, that's definitely not within this 30 podcast or so.
Damn it.
That was hundreds in.
I need like a you list in front of me. You have
the long-term memory of the two of us too, and you're sucking right now.
Yeah. So. Well, I can't remember like the first... Like I don't know if an episode was episode 29 or episode 31. Damn it.
Well, too late.
Okay. Austin, well, hopefully- K-A, the best answer we can give is the Aaron Fletcher KAD episode. We still like constantly say, what should we do with this KAD?
So you agree?
I agree. Let's just leave it at that because I can't remember the rest of like what else was in our first 30.
Kind of brain.
All right. Go ahead. What's the next question that you can read and I can't?
All right.
I can tell it's Allison Day. Paoli.
All right. Nice pronunciation. I think you nailed it better than I would have. Okay. So she asks, Allison asks, I own a boutique employee benefits firm, not an information product business or e-com site. I get a lot of value from your podcast, the newsletter, courses, but I don't think I apply them very well. What would be your best piece of advice about how to apply your strategies to B2B and large B2B businesses? My clients tend to have over 100 employees that need medical insurance.
So
she's a boutique employee benefits firm. Oof.
Yeah, the question that I have and the sort of mental roadblock I have with this question is when you say like how do you implement your strategies, it's almost like, you know, which strategies, because we talk about many different things.
Well, let's narrow it down because I'm getting some ideas. So she's a boutique employee benefit firm. She's not an info product or all that. She's actually like that. She does B2B, so she's wanting to apply what we teach B2B. And their clients tend to have like over 100 employees that need medical insurance. I mean, we talked about podcasting already. You can have a podcast.
Definitely.
Like, so create content. So, I mean, here's the thing. I feel like every single business, if it's B2B, B2C, whatever, C2C, which is cat to cat, I just made that up.
Wouldn't that be consumer to consumer?
No, I wanted to involve cats. I don't know. I was just thinking of cats. I wanted to throw in a new one.
But if in these acronyms, B to C means business to consumer, why wouldn't C to C be consumer to consumer?
Yeah, right. You found a hole in my theory. All right. Or my hypothesis. All right. No, what I was saying basically is like everyone has relationships they want to build for their business and to get basically get that lead flow coming in without them having to work for the lead flow. Mm-hmm. And what we've found is, in for so many other people who do this, is leveraging podcasts to do that.
100%, I think.
Guesting or having your own.
Both. Yeah, I think podcasting is such like an underrated sort of concept in marketing. I think podcasting is probably the best networking tool on the planet that I have ever come across in my life. And if you were listening to our part one of this episode, you'll realize that all of our success has come from networking. It's come from getting to know more and more people. And podcasting has been what's enabled that.
So to keep this answer very simple, because there's obviously, we can overload you and we're very good at this, and we should probably stop being good at this and flipping it. And if we were to like 80-20 or even 90-10 our answer, maybe 95-5 our freaking answer is use podcasting for all the reasons you just said, and do deals. Do deals with the people who do
host. The podcast is the foot in the door.
Yes, and do deals with the podcast hosts that you go on their show, because you have a unique solution to maybe people that are within their network. So think of some Jay Abraham stuff. Go start leveraging other people's podcasts. Network, like the people they've had on as guests, maybe they could be your clients.
Yeah.
So you're going on their platform, but then you're making a relationship with the podcast host, but then you follow up with the podcast host on or after the show, asking for referrals to people that can send you leads. And guess what? You can pay a percentage of those referrals to that podcast host for introductions to people that, you know, become your clients. Boom, there's your lead flow. You don't even need to start your own show. Just go to other people's show and you could start that today.
Yeah. And well, I mean, even if you're in like sort of a, maybe a quote unquote unsexy industry, you're like, you know, a lot of people might think, oh, you know, nobody's going to listen to a podcast around, you know, medical insurance, you know. But here's the thing. You don't necessarily need a lot of listeners because here's how you leverage the podcast. You go and talk to the other people in your industry and ask them if they want to be on your podcast. That's your foot in the door to other people in the industry. Hey, I have a podcast about medical insurance. You know, we interview the top people in the field. We'd love to have you on this podcast, right? And that's your foot in the door with some of these types of people. And that's how you grow the connections.
I think that's great. Yeah. So you could use it. So both of these strategies are perfect answers. You can leverage other people's platforms, do some deals if you want good lead flow, and then you're getting content created and all that stuff. And you can, or you can start your own podcast, have your own platform, be seen as the guy that's just basically putting people up on a platform, but you're the one cherry picking who you want to talk with, and then do deals with them afterwards.
Yeah.
Like it's like you're basically generating your own deal flow and that can 100% use for B2B.
Yeah.
I think that answer is more
leverage a podcast to like build the network and get connected to the people you need to get connected to get more of the clients you need to get.
That was a hell of a question though. Actually, there's no question mark there. So technically it wasn't a question, but it was a lot of statement, but it was a great statement.
Alrighty. Let's move on to Carlos.
All right. Thank you, Allison. All right. Carlos. All right. Don't have a last name for Carlos. How to grow a list from 100 to 1,000, then 1,000 to 10,000 and more, but full of warm PWM and ready to buy leads. PWM. I'm not sure what that stands for.
Pre-warmed, maybe? I don't know.
Pre-warm, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not. Whatever. I'm not familiar with the PWM acronym.
Buyer intent leads.
Yeah,
like ready to buy people. We all wish we had all ready to buy people. But you know what? Actually, what is it? How to grow?
So 100 to 1,000. Then once you're at 1,000, how do you go from 1,000 to 10,000?
So I have some thoughts on the growth side of things. Do you have some ideas? Because I have some ideas on how to like on the buyer intent side of things.
Okay, we'll start with that.
Well, I was just going to reference almost like George Bryant, to be very honest, right? Because like his episode kind of gets into it, but he teaches a lot of that training where, and he gave us a whole session. We met with him last Friday. And, you know, to get people to be very warm, obviously you want a nice, you know, build value on however they entered your ecosystem, your email list. But that indoctrination phase, it's like the first four emails or so, 3 to 4 emails. You want to make sure you're making sure you're like training them to love you. I think George says make it harder for them to leave than it is to stay. So it's like, if you do that in the span of like right when they join, the first three or four emails, then you're basically conditioning them to keep them opening your emails and clicking on your links and then taking action. So as long as you're cool, giving a lot of value up front, but then continuing that conversation, not making it overwhelming, I think you can get to that like higher engagement level.
Yeah.
But growing the list.
Yeah, so growing the list, it's sort of tough because there's so many different ways to grow a list. And it also depends on like are we talking like spending money to grow this list, or are we talking about growing it for free?
Right? What's your favorite maybe free and paid quick ones there?
Well, quick or slow?
Well, no, like one of each. That's what I was saying.
Okay, so, you know, if I was kind of just starting over and I had like money in the bank, I would probably put most of my focus on SEO, to be quite honest, because I think SEO is sort of the highest return on time.
So you're saying that's the slow route to growth.
That's the slow route to grow, but it's also the most long-term route that we've found, right? Like we're building our list today at the rate that we're building it because of content we created 2 years ago.
Yeah, and they're warm traffic because they're very focused on whatever that topic is.
Yeah, they're like, you know, we're optimizing for keywords and things like that. So only the people that are finding it for the keywords that we're trying to optimize for. So, you know, SEO is probably like my favorite way to grow a list because you can do it for free. It's just like, you know, kind of putting in time and some work to do it. But, you know, the quicker way, well, there's really two ways. If you want to build a list really fast, really quick, go buy a company that has a list that you want.
Acquire one.
Go acquire a list. But that's the type of stuff that we're doing now. Outside of that, probably just Facebook ads. I would probably just...
Or you can barter, actually, with other people. Like, you can co-reg a list if you want to, like partner up with a Facebook group or something. I'm leveraging other people's, like, yeah... You could do all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Well, when we were first starting that's out, so going from like 0 to 100 and 100 to 1,000, I could tell you how I did it. Like in the very, very early days, I was doing email list swaps. I was going to people and saying, "Hey, if you send an email to my opt-in page, you know, we'll swap. Right? I'll send an email to your opt-in page. You send an email to my opt-in page, and we'll just swap. And you would go find people that had similar size lists to you. If I had 200 people on my list, I'd find people that had 200 people on their list, and I would go and do this swap thing. And you know, obviously, it had to be sort of similar audiences. Yeah. And I would say like getting to 1,000 is pretty easy by just doing that. Just kind of find other people that are at your level that are trying to grow their list at the same time and start doing some swaps. Obviously, you can't do that from 0 to 1,000. You got to do some organic stuff to get to, you know, your first handful. And to do that, I would just go and engage in communities and things like that.
Yeah. I think we're good here, man.
Yeah, going from 1,000 to 10,000, I would focus on Facebook ads, driving Facebook ad traffic to just to an opt-in page.
Sweet.
That's all right. The simplest path.
Let's move on. We got to pick up the pace. We've only answered three, and we got a ton more to go through, or we will be here all night long.
Okay, go. Stop whining.
Yeah, it's called a statement, my friend. Dan Ryan, why don't you ever have Dan Ryan on as a guest? Why would we?
He's been on as a guest.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he came on the episode with Tom Breeze, and he came on the episode with Mike Rhodes. I think this isn't Dan Ryan. I think fake wrote this in.
I think that's his email address. He has been mentioned, and this is still his statement now. Now we didn't ask for a statement, Dan. Okay, I'm just going to say that right now. You asked a question, but now you're adding a statement. You actually added two sentences. This isn't fair. So,
who is the one talking about picking up the pace here?
He has been mentioned in so many episodes, so many times, asking for a friend. So,
well, he got a shout out on this one, and he got a shout out in part one of this one.
I think because he took up so much airtime, all of those royalties that we owe him for mentioning his name are all null and void.
Yeah.
So we're back to square one now, DR.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Dwayne. Dwayne asks, ooh, this is a long one. Let me read quick. 300 episodes is an awesome milestone. Heck yeah. Congratulations. I've been listening to every episode for the past year in a whole binder full of your show notes that are highlighted and marked up. Oh my God, that's so cool. Dwayne, I've seen you in the group. This is rad. All right, so he says, notes in the biz. That's because of Sue. My question is for the younger Matt and Joe. When you guys first started with an idea and no team, how did your significant others support you?
Good question.
Were they on board with the new adventure or committed to your vision? I know it's a lot easier when I was able to properly explain to my missus and get her fully on board to get going after the end goal.
Yeah. So how did your first wife take it?
Well, saying that I've gone through four now. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. JK, never been divorced.
Nah, me neither. No, both. I'd say both of our wives were pretty damn supportive. I remember in the very beginning, like when we were going to invest in Alex Jeffries, shout out to part one of this episode. When we were investing in Alex Jeffries' course, like it was a big discussion. It was $1,000 course at the time when we were buying it. Maybe it's even 500. I don't remember. Somewhere between 500 and $1,000.
I think it was 1,000.
Yeah. So I think, so I think it was around like 997 because it had to end in a seven.
Sure.
So, but like $1,000 was like a freaking lot of money for us at the time. Mm-hmm. I had recently quit my job, as I've told in previous stories, and I wasn't making any money. So we were like, my wife was supporting me at the time. And so $1,000 was a crazy amount of money. And I just remember like we were like talking about it and we got emotional and mm-hmm. we were like crying about it. And like, we were like, shit, I don't know if we should do it. It's such a risk. $1,000 is a lot of money. And we ended up putting it on a credit card when we did
it. I did as well.
So I had like literally no debt until that time, you know, other than a mortgage. I did have mortgage debt. But yeah, it was a huge decision.
Yeah.
And like, I think Alana told me something at the time about like, you know what, like, because you're agonizing over it and you're trying to make this decision, like, I don't want you to regret not making the decision later. So I think you should do it, just based on like how sort of passionate I was and how sort of emotional we were getting around whether or not, yes, we should do it. Yes or no. Like, I think she could tell it was something I really, really wanted to try to do. And she was like, you're going to regret not doing it. You should do it.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. That's cool. Yeah. For Heather on my side, that was a big talk. It wasn't as emotional, but definitely, I think before then, she already knew that I was like pretty damn determined to make something happen online and not work a day job, because at the time I was doing a corporate gig and really feeling burnt out. And you and I were going down the rabbit hole reading a lot of stuff from Jason Moffitt, I remember, and like butterfly marketing with Mike Vilsame. Mm-hmm. And I was like reading that stuff whenever I was like not working at the day job. It's kind of like you, shout out to part one. At
Internet Artist Business Manifesto too.
That one too. I wasn't reading that one as much, but same era. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was before I think that coaching was like we invested, and she already knew, and I was in college too, and we weren't even married yet. All this stuff was happening like all at the same time for me. Mm-hmm. But she was very supportive and still is my biggest fan. And she was like, yeah, well, I want you, similar to Alana, because I know they talked as well. Like, they're close as well. Mm-hmm. All the time they're talking, probably every day as well in some fashion, it seems like. So it's like, I think they were collaborating with each other because they knew that we were always collaborating and like really passionate. So they both knew that. But interesting thing Heather told me lately, or not lately, but maybe, I don't know, like a year in after I've started, did like kind of got some momentum. She was like, yeah, your mom came to me and like maybe a few months in was like, hey, how long are you going to let Joe do this thing? And my mom was always very supportive, but she was like, hey, how long are you going to be able to like support him and actually like support him in this vision too? Because she was financially like mainly supporting. And that's when my mom, or that's when Heather was like, oh, I'm through and through, you know, like, so it's kind of interesting to hear, like, it's scary.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't come from an entrepreneur background. So
yeah. I mean, we didn't like take the decision to like jump ship from our day jobs lately.
No.
And our wives sort of, I think, supported it. And I think put us in a place where like they trusted our decision.
Yeah. 100%. So that's that. Good question, Dwayne. Nassim Merriam asks, I already have a micro niche in the health and beauty H&B space using natural products. Is it a good idea to restrict affiliate marketing only to H&B, or should I also include the usual digital marketing tools too? Health and beauty and digital marketer tools. I mean, doesn't seem like they go together, but maybe if
I don't know who the audience is. If the audience is only interested in hearing about health and beauty products and you start mailing them about like, hey, go buy ClickFunnels from me, I don't think that would go over well. I guess I'm not totally...
Well, if we look at this, so let's see here. Let's dissect this further. So yeah, unfortunately, we don't have you guys live. So you have a health and beauty business in the natural product space. It's a good idea to restrict affiliate marketing only to that space. Let's answer that first. I don't think it is because, for instance, we're doing a deal with Ojai Energetics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Will Clyden has been on the podcast and, you know, they have a product, Ojai. It's a CBD product, but they want us, and like we're experimenting, some affiliate promotions to our community and with some content marketing in other places. But we're an entrepreneur-based kind of business, you know, our audience.
Yeah.
They know that.
I think like really the best answer I could give would be to like sort of slowly start to test other types of products and just see how people react to them.
Yeah.
Right. Like when we were doing Homebrew Academy with Brad Costanzo, we did a little test. And when I say we, Brad pretty much ran this whole thing, but we did a little test where we set up a landing page called Beer Money Blueprint, where we were going to teach people how to make money online by talking about like beer recipes and stuff like that. I don't remember the entire context. But anyway, Brad created this little mini training that he was going to sell about the about how to make money and mail it to the homebrew list of people that are interested in learning how to make beer at home. And he mailed it and it didn't go over great. It had a few sales, but nothing really to write home about. And so we stopped trying that kind of offer to that list, but you never really know. I think you could start, like with us, we talk to mostly entrepreneurs and business people, so we can find a good crossover. We can go, okay, Ojai Energetics, they have CBD oils, which help like with, you know, supposedly with brain function and you know, more focus, and here's all the benefits of this kind of thing. And we can sort of make that connection between business and that product. So it's not a huge stretch for us. From like health and beauty over to like marketing tools, that
might be a stretch.
That stretch is a little bit bigger unless you can find some way to connect the dots for people.
Yeah, cool. I like that. Yeah, test the waters, can't get hurt, and wrap it up in value. I think that's always going to be the case. All right, so Brian Bennett asks, what is your criteria for choosing software and content vendors to promote as affiliates? Some examples, compensation model, support model, materials, audience, et cetera, et cetera.
100% compensation model. All I care about is the money.
No, you shark.
No, we promote products that don't even pay us.
Sometimes. That's true. yeah, we shout out stuff all the time, probably more that don't.
Yeah, no, I would say our two biggest criteria are we've got to actually like use and like the product.
Yes. And that's the top criteria.
That's piece. Definitely it. Like we never really talk about stuff that we don't use or have tried ourselves. So that's the number one. And then what was going to be my second point here? The other point is we like to be able to build relationships with the product creators. So like if the person who's selling the product, it wants to be untouchable and wants to be like this guru who nobody can get in contact with, we're probably out because we want to be able to jump on we want to be collaborators with the people that we affiliate with. We don't want to be just like passive affiliates who they don't notice us.
Exactly.
Right. So like we want to be able to build that relationship, and it's got to be something that we use ourselves. And really those are our main criteria.
Compensation's cool to know, but that's never really a deciding factor. Like if it, unless we're like scaling an offer, you know, like using paid traffic or we want to make sure we have good cash flow and offer, it's not going to be like this huge delay and yada, yada, yada. So that's all after.
And a lot of that is built into the relationship aspect of it. Like that kind of thing, we like to be able to work out with the product creator.
Yep. Cool. Good question, Brian. All right. Luis Lorenzo. How do you manage your business entity? For example, bank account, payroll, taxes. Oh, this is all the fun stuff. Payroll, taxes, expenses, CPAs, attorneys. I'd like to know all the professional details of your business administration. Thank you.
Shit. Is this stuff we were supposed to be doing?
I haven't done that stuff in 20 years. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's see. How do you manage your business entity? How do we?
Well, here, let's just keep it simple. So we have a CPA, of course, and our CPA we use for our entity, but we also have him for our other entities.
He runs our payroll as well.
And our payroll. So we pay him and his company to do that for us. So we kind of have like a centralized person there. Attorney, we have a couple of attorneys that we've used that we use just on contract basis.
Yeah.
That's like things like agreements mainly.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all you got to do there.
Yeah. I mean, we did an episode with a guy named Dana Robinson a little while ago.
He's awesome.
If you go back to that episode, we do talk about like entities type stuff. And he's actually the attorney that we use when we need stuff reviewed and created.
Yep. In terms of like taxes and all these other like taxes, again, CPA, but we're getting advice, I would say, from a variety of people. Mm-hmm. And our CPA that's a key thing. A great CPA should give you good advice. They're looking out for you. So we're constantly trying to learn and
pretty much like everything on that list that you just said.
It's like two people.
Yeah. So bank accounts, payroll, taxes, expenses, CPAs, attorneys, etc. We have like Dana, who we talk to for any sort of like legal stuff that we need to do. And then almost everything else on that list is our CPA handles it for us.
Pretty much. So I wouldn't complicate it, Luis. And if you need to, I would hire some like maybe a part-time CFO or something.
Yeah.
To give you like a structure that fits your business.
And we do have a bookkeeper too, who.
Yeah, that's true.
Who gets in and updates our QuickBooks every month.
So maybe that's the bank account. Yeah, good point. So bookkeeper, definitely. That's your step one. Like if you're looking to just get something going, just get a bookkeeper first at a minimum, because like at least you'll know what you're playing with, and then probably a CPA after that.
Yeah.
All right. So good question, Luis. All right. Tyrone Shum, how you doing, buddy?
Buddy.
All right. I am considering buying niche websites to grow a portfolio of online assets that generate income from affiliate products rather than starting from scratch. Very smart. It appears there's more demand to purchase online products due to COVID, so it might be faster to find websites that are already ranked and have traffic, then optimize it with affiliate products and an email list. Do you have any recommendations on what type of websites I should be considering and where I can find these? Have you considered this path in your affiliate promotions? Thanks.
We have definitely considered it and talked about it, buying websites.
Well, we technically have with Homebrew
Academy. Homebrew Academy was actually us attempting that.
Well, we did definitely try it, and we could have made it something, but it was a focus issue.
Maybe. Yeah, that was more of a focus issue, not a skill set issue.
And actually, that would probably answer your last question. Yeah, have you considered it? That's probably why we're not doing more of that, because like now we have opportunities that kind of come to us within our network, and we partner up more than doing it this way.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to
it's not really a world that we operate in, so like I don't have a ton of advice.
How to find these websites. I mean, there's websites for that.
Snappa, Empire Flippers.
Flippa. Snappa too.
Flippa.
Flippa. Yeah. Flippa is a good site, and Empire Flippers are the two, I think. And then sometimes maybe Craigslist.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? I don't know. Or no, buy biz sell.
Buy biz sell.
That's a good one. And I think in Australia, I know that's where you're living, there's probably some other websites that are local.
Yeah. So those are places that you can kind of hunt for them. I would also put it out there, like go onto Facebook and just say, hey, I'm looking to buy a website. If you have one that gets a little bit of traffic already and you're thinking about selling it, contact me. I might be interested.
Dude,
and just see what people throw at you.
Tyrone, all right, brother. Let's get a little bit more creative here, actually, even than our answers. He interviews so many amazing people. Tyrone does them now. Sorry, Tyrone, I forget. I think it's actually Property Investory, so shout out there. Great podcast. And Tyrone's been on our show, actually, too. Mm-hmm. Thanks laterally. Like, you have all these connections. Like, start freaking just putting it out to your network. Mm-hmm. Like, every single guest you've ever had on your show, like, shoot, send them an email. Mm-hmm. Just freaking ask them, because you have these people trust you already. So, like, they're probably going to give you some off-market deals. Or you could say, like, hey, you got a project that you're just, like, tired of or know someone else. Like, I'll take it off their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I bet you could do a deal with no money down and then do some Roland Frazier stuff and then do like deferred payment / like just, I don't know, earn in or whatever. Like,
yeah. If you haven't done Roland's Epic Challenge, definitely go through that. It's $55.
Do it.
Definitely go check that out.
He should do a whole episode on that.
Jeez. Yeah. He goes deep into like how to actually acquire these businesses, how to structure them.
All right. So Tyrone, there you go. Hit us up with any further questions because we chat. All right, my man. John Ruths asked, I have a relatively new podcast, just finished recording my 14th episode. Awesome. And I'm interested in starting to reach out to companies who have, or in this parentheses, who have products that I love, that I use in my industry and would benefit from my audience, to begin a referral affiliate advertising relationship. But where do I start? How do I get a hold of the right person within that company to begin the relationship? These are really good questions. All right. So we're starting to get some momentum with podcasting. And I like the model of referral and affiliate and advertising.
That's I mean, quite honestly, leverage the podcast is a pretty simple way. Like, start reaching out to some of the product creators and say, hey, I have a podcast. I'm assuming the podcast is tied to what you're promoting as an affiliate. But reach out to the creators. And by reach out to creators, I mean, like, do reach out using whatever email you can find. So if it's their support desk, send a message to the support saying, hey, who do I need to talk to? I want to promote your product. Is there any way I can get so-and-so on my pod, your creator, your founder on the podcast, right? Just start reaching out just straight to the support desk. I know when people request to be on our podcast, or when people request us to be on their podcast, those emails usually still make it to us because we're happy to go on people's podcasts. So I would reach out to whatever contact email you can find for the creator of the product and say, hey, I've got a podcast. I'd love to have you on it. That's one easy way. The other easy way is the Dream 100 strategy we always talk about.
Yeah, look up for a Dream 100. I won't go for it through it all here, but essentially just make a list of the people that you're looking to connect with and start sharing that with people.
Yeah,
sharing that around and hit them up on social media too. You'd be surprised how many people check the PMs, especially on Twitter and Instagram, places like that. So
I think if you're a member of the Evergreen Profits community, there's actually a video that Joe breaks down exactly how we use the Dream 100.
Cool. All right. Should make sure I'm not getting looking at timing. Okay. Probably. Yeah. All right. Julie Hood is our next one. So, what traffic source has worked best for you recently, and what are you sending to a blog post with an opt-in or a landing page? Thanks. Julie's awesome. Traffic source SEO has been crushing it for us.
Lately, SEO has been really, really big for us. We're starting to get a little bit of traction on YouTube.
SEO really quick. I'll just wrap a quick bow around that one. The main thing we've been focusing on is Yoast to optimize the on-page stuff. But then also, we've been hearing from some SEO folks in our network that contextual content is, or like comprehensive content is really what Google likes to prefer to rank higher up on the rankings there. So meaning, hey, for whatever topic in that keyword you have, beef it up enough so it's answering all these different topics that people are typically searching for around that thing. Mm-hmm. And you'll likely be able to kind of move up the ranks a lot quicker if you just add in some of that content. And then you're using a topic called use topic.
Yeah.
And it helps you do that.
Yeah. So SEO is our biggest traffic driver. Behind that, I'd say Google ads and Facebook ads are kind of tied. We kind of play around with those a lot. And then our email list, we drive a lot of traffic with our email list as well.
Cool. Joe Kearns, throughout your entrepreneurial journey, what were the biggest quantum leap moments where your business jumped forward exponentially? What do you think caused those? And in hindsight, did you miss opportunities to make that jump earlier? Note, I'm not only referring to revenue growth. This could be anything that felt deeply impactful or significant in any lasting way. Damn, these are good questions. Oh, man, these are... You said these were very fast questions. BS, Matt. This is like deep
stuff. Could give fast answers, but...
No, I know. These are so good. All right. So we've talked a lot about our quantum leaps already.
I almost feel if you listen back to part one, we sort of answer that question. Like that's literally what part one is like these are all the biggest quantum leap jumps in our business.
Perfect. So Joe... not copping out of this answer, but I think that's going to actually answer it way more in depth.
So yeah, we have about an hour and 20 minute answer for you.
yeah, you'll like that. So check out this previous episode. All right, Nigel asked, best way to recover the cost of paid traffic?
Okay, make more money than it costs to drive the traffic.
So it's typically, have some really cool content that people want, sell them something that people want, and have a good relationship, and then like have a no-brainer product that probably is like what the it just makes enough money to cut all the costs of the advertising.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the term, but the sort of tripwire concept, that is kind of designed to liquidate your ad costs. If you can put a very low barrier to entry offer in front of somebody that's like $10 ish, right, and you can get your cost per acquisition below $10, you're generating you know, free or even possibly in profit leads. It's just a matter of getting the right combination of offer and copy and landing page and keyword targeting. Like, there's sort of a broad answer to that question, but you know, at the end of the day, think of something that's sort of a low barrier entry way to get people onto your list, and then you can have upsells to actually maximize profits and things like that. But
can also like just free sell plus your
shipping stuff freaking still kicks butt.
I mean, there's you can think of probably all sorts of recovering the cost of paid traffic. I mean, like, sometimes it doesn't have to be directly through the same funnel. Maybe it's like selling something else that supplements that kind of ad spend, so you're just applying revenue from one place in your business to another. Who's to say that it all has to happen in the same funnel? Don't have this like funnel locking mentality, you know? So maybe there's a lateral way to pay for paid traffic if you just like bring on one more client, let's say. You know what I mean? Like, it could be a total lead gen play where it allows you to actually like maybe pay for better leads that will pay for bigger price shit later on, that you don't have to worry about just covering traffic. Oh no, you just made a shit ton of profit.
Well, you know, to be totally honest, most of our ads lose money. Like, we,
as they probably should, because if you're doing like the targeting and all that
stuff. Most of our ads lose money, you know, day one that they're being run, right? So we're bringing people onto our list, and for the most part, we're bringing them onto our list by just giving away free content. Yes, there's an upsell after they opt in, but not a huge percentage take it. We usually make that sale, you know, 2 weeks later, and then we're sprinkling in some affiliate offers, so we're actually recouping some of our money on some of these affiliate offers, and it all comes back to us. We used a tool called Wicked Reports, and we found that, you know, for every person that we put on our list, we make like, I don't remember what the number was, like $200 or something per person that we put on our list. So we knew that if we can drive traffic and get leads for under $200, according to Wicked Reports, we make at least $200 per person we put on our list. It may not happen the same day we drive the traffic. It may happen a week later, 2 weeks later, a month later, but on average, that's how profitable we are per person we put on our list. So, you know your numbers, and that's not, then you just reverse engineer it.
Cool. All right. Tristan Bailey asks, when you want more consistent sales is the, when you want more consistent sales, is the first thing to do to hire more staff or a salesperson or a VA?
I don't know if I'm the best person to answer this question. Hire more staff, salesperson, or VA. I mean, in my mind, the first person to hire for, I think it's going to be different for everybody.
Well, probably, yeah.
Basically, I think what he's asking is, once you start making money, what's your first hire?
Yeah, I gotcha.
And I think it's really going to be different for every person. It's like, it's almost like, what things in your business do you want to be doing, right? For me, the first hire I've always made in every single business I've had along the line, the first hire has always been a customer support person.
Because you don't want to do it.
I don't like seeing the negative sides of the business. Like, I want our support person to provide me with feedback they're hearing, but I don't want to see the, like, you scam artist shithead emails, like, which you get in support from time to time. Every now and then.
I see those. I don't run it, but I definitely see some.
Not like we get those very often.
No, we don't. It's extremely rare. They're all lying anyway. So
they're the real scammers.
Exactly. So I would say, think about what you were saying. I would, it's going to depend on the motivation of your business. Like, if you want more revenue for some reason, because you're going to go apply that revenue somewhere else or whatever, like, cool. But if, like, maybe you just want to have more profits in your company, so it doesn't mean that you need necessarily more sales or like more staff, but be more lean with how your revenue machine is running, you know?
Yeah, like, I feel like this is a question that the answer is very individualized per business.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's almost like whatever task is the most either monotonous or one that messes up your headspace the most, that's probably the one that you should Yeah, K-A-D it.
There you go. All right. Great question, Tristan. These are awesome. I think I have a feeling, because I think we have, Matt, I think we have time for like four.
Let's
more.
Do four.
Yeah. Okay. Let's, I'm just, yeah. All right. Bruce Brodine. Hey, buddy. Bruce is awesome. He's been with us a long time. All right. Said, he says, print newsletter production. So that's the kind of question. In a time when the USPS is having such historic struggles and the inflow of physical mail going into people's mailboxes continues to drop, it is a great time to incorporate physical newsletter into marketing plans and garnish attention.
I agree.
It would be helpful to help or to have you share your understanding of the Agora model, as you have known so many of the key players there recently. And then your experience over the last few years with the Evergreen Profits newsletter. A breakdown of the production process and cost would be extremely beneficial and powerful. Please, thank you both. Whew, that actually would be an awesome episode, I think, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, so we did an episode. It was a therapy session that we recorded in an airport. And I know we looked very awkward and because we were like sitting in an airport recording a podcast. But we actually talked about the Agora model because we'd just flown home from being in Florida, true. Hanging out with the Agora people. And on our stopover, we recorded in an O'Hare. Interview where we, in O'Hare Airport, because we're going from Orlando to Chicago to San Diego. Anyway, in O'Hare Airport, we recorded an episode where we actually talked about what we learned about Agora. And,
I would say that's probably the best place to go for that, for the Agora model. For here, full break.
I will say one thing that I do remember about the Agora model is they have this, the model for their newsletters is they don't go print until they had something like 10,000. I don't remember the exact number, but like until they have 10,000 subscribers on a specific newsletter, they keep it digital. Once it passes a certain threshold, only then do they switch it to print, which we went print from day one. But I do remember that aspect of their model, but we do have that episode that goes deeper into it.
Yeah, and that's actually a good distinction. They go digital first. We chose to not. They go after a certain target number. I mean, they have their systems dialed in. Yeah, I mean, that's very obvious. So, so they know there's probably a break-even point where they're like, okay, cool, now switch it to paid, and then you're going to do all these other things too. So,
and their newsletter is kind of their quote-unquote tripwire, right? The newsletter is always their sort of lowest barrier to entry offer.
To bigger stuff.
There's a ton of other upsells that they always do in the mix once you get on the newsletter.
In terms of us getting delivered mail and all that, I don't know how that's going to affect us. I got actually our newsletter yesterday in the mail.
It came this month.
Yeah, it came to us. Our production team is McManus.
McManus,
production,
yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
We've run into a few roadblocks since COVID. There's a few countries. So, like, everybody, like, in most countries should have be no interruption in the newsletter. There was two or three countries, and I can't remember exactly which ones they were off the top of my head.
India was one of them.
But they were basically blocking mail from the U.S. into those countries.
Somewhere in Africa...
So we have a handful of customers that were actually holding their newsletters until those lifts get lifted or until those blocks we get can lifted.
Deliver them.
In fact, last I heard, though, I actually got an email from Holly over at McManus just earlier this week saying that like all those things have been lifted. So everybody who was waiting for newsletters actually should have them now.
Sweet. Good. But yeah, Bruce. Yeah, it's going to take a while to break down the whole production process and all that stuff.
I'll give you a quick rundown. Here's kind of what happens with the newsletter breakdown. So we have Sue, who takes the notes on every single episode. Then my wife, Alana, actually reviews the notes of every episode and sort of checks for grammar and typos, just a second pair of eyes on them. And then we compile all the notes. This is typically me. I'll take... basically all the notes from one episode, compile them into a Google Doc, and then I'll take that Google Doc, export it as a PDF, I send it to McManus, and then I also send an exported list of all of our customers to McManus, and that's pretty much the whole process. They take care of the rest from there. They get a PDF and essentially an Excel file of like, here's everybody it needs to go to.
Yeah.
And that's the newsletter process.
Yeah, and you can get a quote from them on whatever your newsletter looks like. So that's where your cost will come from, and obviously whatever people are involved too.
Yeah, I mean the cost is obviously it's built on volume, the size of the newsletter, paper, the type of paper, quality, color, or black and white. So there's like so many variables for cost. But that's cool. That's how the process works.
Alrighty, Sam. Sam is asking,
Sam Adadra.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I'm horrible at names.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing them right. I don't have anybody to tell me that I'm not pronouncing them right.
All right. If you had to start all over from scratch and didn't know anyone, what would be your fastest path to financial independence? And didn't know anyone.
Didn't know anyone. That'd be the hardest part about it.
Well, yeah, obviously. I would start to know people quickly.
Yeah.
Because it's completely about who you know. So yeah. I would 100%. What I would do is actually probably, well, hold on. It's not you didn't forget what you know. It's just had to start from scratch. I would start doing deals, man. I would start doing deals with people that I would learn to know, you know, maybe go on their podcast or like.
What do you mean by deals though?
Because
if you don't have connections or cred right now.
So I would probably do something like a Jay Abraham style thing, like where I'd see, hey, here's a company. Like he has this example of like kitchen remodel companies. Mm-hmm. All right, you have a kitchen remodel company. Well, when someone hires that company, the homeowner is going to probably want some other stuff done around the house too, like their yard, their patio, maybe some furniture. Other things to keep up with that cool new kitchen that they have. So what Jay would do, and I think he has done, is go to that company for the kitchen remodel and ask them if he can get their leads. And basically what he's going to do is this: go hit up a yard company, a furniture company, and pool company, and whatever, and freaking start doing deals and say like, hey, you know, if you sell a kitchen remodel, you know, and you start kind of basically getting the referral fee from those connections of any deals between the two companies, and you can kind of start being a broker, mm-hmm. more or less. So I would start doing deals with other people's lead flow. Like he always says, what, get access and access, or assets and access. Mm-hmm. So the assets there would be leads, and now you're getting access to them, and all you're doing is just pairing them up with another like possible vendor.
Yeah.
And then you're taking a piece.
I think that'd be a good way to go. I think alternatively, I've thought about this quite a bit. If I was completely starting from scratch, I would probably, you know, use my skill sets, assuming I have the skill sets I have today. I would probably go freelance for some people to begin, to get my foot in the door, to get to know mm-hmm. some people. I would go freelance and build some like funnels and landing pages and maybe help some people with ads and sort of use my existing skill set and sell them as services to other people. And that would be my sort of foot in the door. And I would I would start a podcast from day one and start verbally blogging about my experiences. And then as I get to know more people, I'd start inviting my connections onto the podcast. I'd start interviewing them. All the while I'm making my money by doing freelance gigs and just like, mm-hmm. you know, building my connections by helping other companies. That's probably my path that I could see starting from. And then eventually I could see getting to like more of the deal making stuff. But, mm-hmm. you know, assuming I have like really no network in the beginning, that's probably where I would start.
Yeah, I would go probably cold to people. Yeah, like, because I'd be like, all right, I don't want to dick around. I want to just jump to it and work some stuff. But I like the idea of, yeah, starting a podcast would be a no-brainer, because once you know how to do it and you know how to create like a Dream 100 list mm-hmm. and to figure out how to identify the movers and shakers to network with, invite them on your show, obviously, mm-hmm. but then buddy up with them and give value, you can quickly create really good business off of that.
For sure.
Very fast.
Tumas.
Okay. Claire Maxfield asks, what is the optimum times you should post per week? Post every week. Is it daily, twice daily, 4 to 5 days per week, or have you found a magic combination that has worked and really unique? I don't know what kind of posting she's referring to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming blogging, podcasting, just like putting content out.
Is it daily, twice daily,
I mean, yeah. I'm sure there's some people out there that are like paying attention to those metrics and saying Tuesdays and
yeah, I don't have a good answer.
Thursdays are the best, but like we don't really. So what I do know is when we email our list, we have days that are more responsive than other days. Mm-hmm. Like typically Fridays and Saturdays aren't great when we email our list. For whatever reason, Sundays we start to get a little bit better response from our email list. Seems like people are starting to like ease back into looking at their computer on Sundays or something. And then Monday through Thursday, we sort of gradually see like a rise in response throughout the week. Mm-hmm. That's just looking at our numbers from like when we email our list. As far as like the like we picked Tuesday and Thursday for our podcast just sort of arbitrarily, right? We were we were releasing them on Wednesdays and we're like, well, let's up it to two a week. And so we just like split it. We're like, okay, Tuesday, Thursday then. And it was pretty arbitrary. And we've never really gotten too hung up on like, should we optimize the day of the week that they're released? So yeah, I don't know. I guess that's just an experimental thing. Just put content out every day for a while, or you know, sort of rotate through days. Like 1 week, maybe release Tuesday, maybe Thursday. Next week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Start like rotating through different days each week, and just kind of keep an eye on when you see trends, because different industries are going to be different, right? Some businesses you're working through the weekends, but you have days off during the week, and those people in those industries might be at their computer more on the weekends than people in other industries. So I think you really got to sort of work that out with your audience a little bit by just kind of putting content out there and seeing which days seem to get the most engagement.
Getting the love. I would say the very first thing to do is don't overcommit. Don't overcommit to posting too much too fast.
Start slow. Like
you want to be consistent and start with one per week.
Yeah. Like if you're talking podcasting, don't jump to two a week, because you know, it can get crazy quickly if, you know, you haven't figured out if you can handle one a week yet.
All right, Caleb. Last question, actually, that we'll be able to do today. What's the fastest path? I kind of like this, by the way, the AMA stuff. If people dig it, maybe write in and let us know to the Facebook page. All right, so what's the fastest path to cash with creating a content/affiliate site? I'm looking at launching a couple of content sites in the next few months that will generate revenue through affiliate links and eventually my own products based on what the audience is looking for, I'm assuming. Fastest path to cash, acquiring a site that's already making money this way or having traffic.
Yeah, basically industry. What Tyrone was asking earlier.
I would probably do that. I would do that. Sorry, my wife is calling me. Definitely got to get going. Matt, any other answers?
So
don't get distracted. It's okay.
So the fastest path to cash. You know, we have a couple actually really good episodes on this with I feel like it's a cop out to point people to other episodes, but we have an episode where we talked to Steven at Skepsis, right? We have actually a couple of them by the time. No, not yet. There's another one coming out with him soon. So Steven Steven. So we've got one with him where we talk about that. And then we've got one with Mark Webster, right? The Authority Hacker. So we got one with him that just came out where we talk about creating affiliate sites. And those are really the models that we're following with the affiliate site. We're just trying to make comprehensive content. We're on whatever affiliate products we promote, we want to be the biggest resource for that thing. Like if you go look at our article about Snappa on our blog, it's the most comprehensive article around Snappa that's like probably on the internet outside of like Snappa's help docs, right? And Google is rewarding us by putting us at the top because people click on our article. They're on there for a long time. There's a lot of content there, but it also answers like every possible question you can think of around that specific product. You look at ThriveCart, the way we're promoting ThriveCart is we built a whole damn blog around one single product over at getthrivecart.com. So every piece of content that we release is about that one tool. And over time, each of those pieces of content starts to rank. And next thing we know, it's like we own Google for a whole bunch of long tail ThriveCart keywords. And that's how we became ThriveCart's number one affiliate. So comprehensive content on whatever you're promoting. Just go as deep as humanly possible with the content.
And Caleb does that too. I know on Hemp Daddies, you create some freaking really good posts over there. So
kickstart it with some Facebook ads.
As long as it's not in the CBD space.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're in the CBD space, so maybe don't kickstart it with Facebook ads. That's what I would do. Otherwise, though, is focus on comprehensive content and adding value to other people's sites where you can then link back. You know, forums and blogs and stuff like that.
I dig it. Cool. Well, that was a lot of questions, and I think we covered a lot there. This is a big part 300th episode, and it was good. Of now finishing part two, my brain is numb.
Yes, I can tell.
Your brain's always numb.
My brain wakes up numb.
Weird. Because
yeah.
I work.
It's just always numb. I don't know what to say.
You. Cool. Well, I think this was a great AMA, and I think it'd be fun to do it again, too. I don't know how the notes are going to look on this one,
yeah.
But it should be interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe quick, yeah, I don't know, maybe some ideas for Sue. It could be like little quick mini cliff notes from each answer, I guess.
Well, I'll send her all these questions, too, so maybe she could just make a doc with the questions and then summarize our answer to each question real quick.
There we go. Yeah. That's actually a good one. Okay, cool. Yeah. So then everyone who asks the question can get a little shout-out, too, with their name. And especially Dan Ryan. I mean, you know, his questions.
You can obviously delete Dan Ryan.
Yeah, no, don't need him, Sue. Just X him out permanently. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Okay, bye-bye.
Adios. Hey, hey, hey. Thank you for listening to that episode. This is Joe Fear. I'm sure you probably already knew that. And Matt is not here right now, but I'm pretty sure he enjoyed the episode just as much as you and I did, because, you know, he went into the production of kind of making that thing right along with me. So thank you very much. And I want to give a quick shout out to our buddies over at Easy Webinar. These guys have been supporting us for a while, a long time. And Casey Zeman is just a super good guy all around. He's actually been on the show before. He's the founder of Easy Webinar. So if you look up Casey Zeman on any podcast platform you're listening to, go check him out. Go check out his backstory, what he's all about. You can learn a lot about webinars as well. And right now, you know, Easy Webinar, these guys are actually hooking you up with a great trial. It's a completely free trial to test out their software, soup to nuts, check it all out and see if it's a good fit for you. If you go to easywebinar.com/hustle, that's HUSTLE, if you didn't know how to spell hustle, there you go. So if you go to easywebinar.com/hustle, you can go grab a free trial. And Easy Webinar literally lives up to its name. It's super simple. I mean, super easy. And it does all the stuff that you're looking for in any kind of thing with webinars. I mean, they literally cover every single type of webinar you possibly can do. So from live to automated to scheduled at specific times and all these crazy features in between. Can't even list them all out. I'll be here way too long. They give you a ton of advanced analytics, what's working, what's not during your webinar based off all these actions. You'll see who attended, how long they stayed, if they clicked the offer or if they didn't. Basically, you're going to make more money and you're going to work less with this thing and you're going to create better relationships with the folks that are listening because it's a good experience. You want to give that good experience along with some great content, of course, and a killer offer if that's what you got for them. So go try it out yourself. Go check out easywebinar.com/hustle. That's easywebinar.com/hustle. All righty. So that is the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, enjoying it. Hopefully you did. I'm pretty sure you did if you lasted this long. And go check out Easy Webinar when you get the chance, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks everybody for listening to this episode of the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. For taking the time to listen, we want to give you something a little bit special. Every single episode that we do, we actually have somebody on our team take notes. We basically have a Cliff's Notes version of every episode where you can go and find all of the tips and tactics that they laid out, all of the resources that they laid out, all the good stuff from this episode. We actually have a nice simple notes version that you can find on our website. So go to evergreenprofits.com, find this episode that you just listened to, and give us your email address and we'll send you the notes. Thanks for listening.
Go get it.
Wiki.